if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. This is our 2024 Masters Tournament in-depth research podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this year's much-anticipated first major championship. Hi, guys. How are you both?
Afternoon, Steve. Barry. Yeah, all good here, thanks.
Afternoon, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And, of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have our Masters research preview. We've got major championship form statistics that Paul has pulled together lovingly. Masters strokes gained rankings. I think it's the first time we've had strokes gained rankings for the Masters.
Yeah, three years worth now.
Brilliant. And Masters course form stats. Can you believe it? All of this valuable information and statistical analysis is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall. We're available on X. You can follow us. Barry's at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available along with my weekly golf betting show. If you are listening to this on the on the YouTube channel, don't hesitate to press that like button and subscribe to the channel as well. Right, now you guys, as listeners, power this podcast. So we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Now, this individual has completely ignored that. It's JMarine013. We do know, though, he's in the United States of America. Hi, Joe. His title is awesome. Five stars. These guys go into so much detail. Love the site and the podcast! Exclamation mark. That's it. Short and sweet.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Jay. Best of luck next week.
Nice one, Jay. Thank you.
Right, before we set off on this voyage of Masters Tournament delight, I'm going to hand over to my colleague Paul Williams, who will take you through the Golf Betting System Majors competition, which in 2024 is sponsored by Bet365. Over to you, Paul.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, if you've played before, then it's the same as previous years, effectively. If you haven't, then dead simple. And we'll put the full details and a link to the rules within the podcast description. But basically, we want four names. One name for the Masters, one name for the PGA Championship, one name for the US Open, one name for the Open Championship. So four different names, four different players. And what we'll do is we'll collate their dollar earnings from each of the respective major that you select them for. We'll create a little mini leaderboard of all the entrants all around the world who play this year. And we'll, at the end of the Open Championship, declare a winner, a second and a third place. And there's cash prizes for those first, second and third place finishers. So basically, four names, four different names, and we'll see how they fare. And the better they finish, the more dollars they earn, the more points you get, the more likely you are to win a prize. Top prize is £150 or currency equivalent. Second is £75. Third is £25. And big thanks again to Bet365, who have sponsored the competition every year for, I don't know, was it now, Steve, 10, 12 years? It's a long time they've been supporting the competition. So thanks to them. Don't forget, if you're new to Bet365, then you can grab their latest Bet10, get £30 or euros in free bets promotion using the bonus code SPORT30, SPORT30, full T's and C's in the podcast description on the website. Check them out. And if you haven't got an account, then well worth it with Bet365. They are truly excellent for golf, I must say.
Sport 30 for your £30 of free bets with Bet365 if you open a new account. All good. I'm getting so excited, chaps. I can almost see the
there,
first
isn't it?
The first tee off time on Thursday.
On Thursday, yeah.
Where should we start on this voyage of delight? Let's start, shall we, with the basic premises about the golf course, Augusta National. Designer, Dr. Alistair McKenzie and Bobby Jones, 33 original. But they are basically renovating this course every single year. Big renovations in 22. Last year, they extended the 13th, the par 5 on Amen Corner. There's fresh renovations this year as well. I'll take you into those details in a short while. Course type, my classifications, classical golf course, old style. It's long in length, undoubted. I'm categorising it as technical as well. The scoring numbers that we have seen over recent renewals, 10 under, 10 under and 12 under last year. It's not as easy as the course used to play. I think the weather has a lot to do with that. We've seen a lot of gnarly, nasty, cold weather here recently. I can always remember sort of Phil Mickelson walking around in his shirt sleeves, getting a bit of sweat on when he was slapping the ball around and getting 16 under around here. But you don't seem to get that much anymore.
No.
It's more kind of woolly jumpers and bobble hats. Mm-hmm. And 35 mile an hour gusting winds.
Tends to get the scoring down a bit.
Yeah. Doesn't do a lot, does it? In terms of the agronomy, I didn't even say the yardage. The yardage is fresh this year, chaps. 7,555 yards. The reason for that is they have put a new tee box on pink dogwood, the second hole, which is a par 5. It is 10 yards further back and it is further to the left of where the original tee box was. The idea being they're trying to bring the right fairway bunker more into play. Mm. They've also, and this came out in Rory McIlroy's interview yesterday at the Valero Texas Open, added new green complexes this year. They have added them on holes 2, pink dogwood, 4, flowering crabapple, one of my favourites, and 6, juniper. The idea of the new green complexes is to be able to have flexibility in terms of pin positions. The 2 and 4 green complexes are definitely, Rory says, going to have new middle of the green pin positions. And he was talking about a new back hole position on a new ledge that they've placed on the 6th green at Juniper. So 7,555 yards. It plays as a par 72. 4 par 5s. What else do we need to know? Clearly, no rough in play. They don't have rough here, do they? They have a first cut, which is rye grass. It's 1.38 inches every single year in length. The fairways are also ryegrass mixed with Bermuda grass. And the greens themselves, it's the first time in 2024 that we will have seen bent grass greens. Other things to note, a plethora of uneven fairway lines. Clearly, this golf course as well, with its valley setting, has got lots and lots and lots of, what's the word I'm looking for? I've gone blank.
Elevation changes.
That's the one. Elevation changes. In old world, in my world, that's uphill and downhill.
Yep. Doesn't really come across like that on the TV as much, but certainly listening.
I think when you get there, you realise, yeah.
Yeah, one day we'll get there, Steve.
It's like if you're into your motor racing, Brands Hatch, they go hurtling down the home straight and they go into a bend called Paddock Hill Bend. And when you used to watch it on TV, you're like, oh, it goes downhill a bit. When I've been there, it's literally like the north face of the Eiger. And you're like, how the hell do these cars and motorbikes go around here at over 100 miles an hour?
Mm.
I think it's going to be something similar to that when you actually go there. It's like, oh, my Lord. I think good courses to link into on that basis, definitely Kapalua, the plantation course. Mm. And you do see a lot of players that win here or do well here have got excellent records at that tournament of champions, because that, again, it's just elevation changes everywhere. Riviera is another one that kind of links down into that as well, because Riviera, loads of uneven lies, lots of hanging lies, and plenty of holes with elevation change, especially the 18th. So, I don't know really if we, I mean, most people know about all this stuff. The one fact I do like to throw out there: the fairways are traditionally mown against the hole to minimise driving distance, effectively meaning this golf course is now likely to play circa 7,900 yards in length. That's crazy.
Mm. Pretty long.
And it's also, to me, it's a bit like a kind of Carolina golf course on heat, because on steroids, because a lot of these holes, it isn't just pure grunt. It isn't bomb and gouge, this place, by any means. There isn't any rough for a start, but you can't just blast it round here. You have to position your ball all the way around this golf course because of various dog legs, because you might find that there's a 20, you know, a 15 or 20 yard stretch of a fairway that has an even lie compared to uneven lies in other places on that fairway. There's all manner of small intricacies here that can really make a difference, a huge difference to scoring. So, you know, it's a gig where I think experience pays, but It's just you've got to be on the ball all the time. You cannot afford silly mistakes around here. Mm. Although saying that, John Rahm, didn't he double the first last year and still won?
He did. Mm. So there goes that stat out the window. It's possible. but it was something we relied on for quite a while, that, like, don't make doubles or worse. So, you know, it's as much, I love, you know, getting the trends together, because they can help you, like, narrow down the field. Mm. Who does the trends piece every year?
Dave Tindall.
Betfair.
Yeah.
That's it. His name escaped me. I love that article every year. It's now part of my master's, like, warm up and prep. I kind of read it last night. And those trends, they do help kind of narrow things down. But I always like to think there's an exception to the rule. Mm. Just to keep it in mind, like, so if somebody hasn't had a top 10 before, kind of just, but they might have had a top 15, kind of just kind of keep them in that little gray zone and don't just put a line through them straight away, because that could be the one player that kind of does it.
There are so many trends, and there's always an exclamation, there's always a bracket at the end, but these guys are the exceptions. Mm. 8 of the last 10, 9 of the last 11, 10 of the last 15.
Mm. Yep.
Here's one for you. 10 of the last 12 have had one in their last 6 starts. You think, oh, that's a good stat. And then you read, but Patrick Reed and Matsuyama are the exceptions to that rule.
Yeah. But then that's why you were getting a premium on their, well, not that's why, that was one of the reasons you would have been getting a premium on their price at the time.
Yeah.
Mm.
Versus the short prices that have won either side of that or around that over the last few years.
Barry, I know you're into your golf architecture greatly, and you are a crusader against what the PGA Tour tend to be doing on their tour in recent times. And I know you have many supporters in that fight, that fight that you're having with the PGA Tour. What's a 30-second synopsis of Augusta National for you?
Well, first of all, I don't think the PGA Tour realise they're in any sort of fight with me.
There'll be litigation heading your way. I should have said allegedly. Allegedly fighting.
Allegedly, yeah. There's been no shots fired from my side. They just don't need to spend as much money with the local fire departments on the for the water. On that point, I think there is they do have a lot to kind of contend with in terms of changeable weather in the States can happen very quickly. You can get a couple of dry, sunny or dry wind days that can completely crisp and out and kill a golf course very quickly. So, you know, they err on the side of caution. I kind of guess I understand that. I mean, anyway, moving back to Augusta, we're not at the PGA Tour next week. We're on a major. It's almost surreal how perfect it all appears on TV. There isn't a blade of grass out of place. You don't see divots on the fairways. For any of the pros, it must be a very special thing because you just don't get to play golf courses like that, hardly ever. So there's probably a little kind of awe factor when you're there in your first 1 or 2 years, and I'd say it never loses that magic. So you're always going to feel like special playing that course. As an amateur, we'd all be terrified to take divots for fear of hurting the golf course. So I would anyway. I think just because of how perfect it is, you know that it then, there's less of the golf course can be blamed for anything that goes wrong. So it all falls back in onto you. So like a psychological thing that you know it's requiring exactness and perfection, and that pressure builds throughout the week on every single shot you play. So you know it's all about you, and there's very little externality you can, you know, external things you can blame it on. Maybe a bit of wind, but the course probably won't screw you over with, you know, a poor condition of something. I don't know. That's a very unusual answer to your question about a golf course, but that's how I kind of perceive it. Like, it impacts you in a mental way,
yeah.
Because it's just quite different from all other challenges.
Asks a lot of questions, Barry, doesn't it?
That's why you're on the podcast, Barry, because your obtuse views that we would never ever come up with. I know you love the course, though. I'll tell you how Rory McIlroy thinks this course plays, and how you need to tame. This is how you tame Augusta. Yeah. First thing he answered was discipline, which made me chuckle with Rory. Sticking to the game plan made me chuckle with Rory. And then this one really made me chuckle. You can't be tempted around here. He also said high lines when it comes to reading putts, which I thought was interesting. In fact, overread the break is what he's saying there.
Like
putts. And then he came out with this quote, and I think this is absolutely brilliant. Good golf at Augusta feels like boring golf. And I think that is something I've always struggled with because that isn't my game. Good golf at Augusta feels like boring golf.
Mm-hmm. There used to be an argument that just hitting greens was the absolute key statistic for this. And
yep.
If you went round and just churned out greens in regulation, gave yourself chances, didn't make bogeys, then you know you could potentially be there a Sunday afternoon in with a shout of winning it. And I guess in a way that would be defined as boring golf. You know, Scotty Scheffler goes out and absolutely pounds the greens in regulation this week, putts averagely. Then, you know, that could be the definition of a boring win, I guess.
Is there a psychological approach to tweaking your reward system to get excited about playing a boring approach, because that is a successful shot around there. Mm. So it's not the actual shot itself. It's how you react to the shot or how you perceive what an exciting shot is.
Exactly. It's almost like these people that only like to play well in Birdie Fest where you're shooting 28 under par. But as you always say, you're still shooting the same number of shots, really. It's just a nominal number, isn't it? Around here, you've got to basically say, look, if I'm not going to go for the green here and be tricked into making double around on this hole, I'm just going to play for par. Overall, you're closer to the end result, aren't you? Which could be putting the green jacket on Sunday. Discipline.
It's a great thing about majors when they are, you know, the weather and everything cooperates, that you do get this very distinct and different style challenge than the one they're presented with for 90% of the weeks on tour. So it's, you know, you're having to make a change mentally and on how you're approaching a course when you're practicing something completely different for most of the rest of the time. So it's a hard thing to switch habits, and especially just to snap your fingers and do it on one given week or four times a year, maybe five or six if you get one or two particularly tricky courses. But that's another really interesting element to like preparing yourself. It's not just a major, it's also a different style of challenge that you're used to playing.
I'm sorry to be focusing on Rory, but it's not a deliberate thing, but it's just that I watched the interview a few hours ago, and some of the stuff he was saying was so pertinent. Another thing he said was that if you were given if a professional golfer of his caliber, or you know, on the PGA Tour, was tasked with shooting level par 72s for 4 days around Augusta, he said, that's great. You'd go into it thinking, well, this is a relatively easy task for us. And he said, what would happen is you'd be playing away and you'd probably backdoor a 69 or a 68 and, you know, you'd be good about yourself. He said, when you turn that on its head, though, and you're tasked with having to shoot a 67 around Augusta, that's also bringing 76 and 77 into play. And that's how this course is. And that, I thought, was a perfect analogy. And that's going to this thing about not being tempted, forcing. We've always said here, Masters winners are always up with the pace from the very first round. You cannot come from way back to win this tournament, because for every birdie you make, you're making a bogey as well. And that's Augusta National. You can't force it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can get away with it for nine holes, though, when you hit a hot streak.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't feel like anybody's forcing it in those situations. It's just they found like this beautiful kind of Venn diagram where they're swinging well and pins match and they're seeing reads and a couple of putts roll in, and it doesn't feel like they're necessarily forcing the issue to go with certain things. It's just the blocks fall into place nicely, like a good Tetris puzzle for that particular stretch of holes.
Yeah. That's probably why we see so few true contenders who are tackling it for the first time. You know, these golfers will have watched the Masters for many years before they get to play it for the first time, and will probably feel like we do, that we know the holes. You know, as observers, as viewers, we know the holes. But actually going out there and trying to execute it, and not being overly bullish on the holes that are simply par holes, holes that you just need to cross off, and attack the ones that are going to offer you opportunities further down the line. Take some discipline. I think that's a good mentality, a good way to think about the course. Actually,
like I read about Max Homa was he did a commentary on some of the holes on the Masters app, which as always is just phenomenal. All apps could be even close to how good that is. But he was doing a commentary on the front nine, and I think Tom Kim's doing on the back nine, and making my way through it. But Max has said he's never birdied the third hole, which is a short par four. You can drive it up into the throat of the green to just have a chip shot up, or which seems to be the more popular approach to playing that hole these days versus laying up to the, you know, to a full wedge distance. He's played it 10 times and he hasn't birdied it on a really short hole, which you'd expect these pros to make.
Yeah,
you know, maybe two birdies out of those 10 occasions.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Since Dustin Johnson's blowout here in November, where he scored 20 under par, the course averages have been, bearing in mind it's par 72, they've been 73.06 Matsuyama, 73.95 the year Scheffler won, very windy, 72.96 last year. That, in terms of difficulty ranking, 7 out of 51, 3 out of 50, and 6 out of 40. Interesting numbers. I will ask you guys, in fact, I am going to do that now. In your opinion, I'll start with Paul. What do you think are three absolutely critical skill sets that a Masters winner needs to tame Augusta National?
I think you've just touched on one of them, which is discipline, a second ago. I think having just discussed that, then that's got to be part of the mentality. But I think you need some length of the tee. I think you can just about get away with this as a medium length hitter if everything else works. But the shorter hitters, I just don't think on a course, as you've described, that can stretch in reality up to, you know, touching 8,000 yards in terms of the way it really plays.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who's averaging, you know, in the lower parts of the driving distance stats, it's a hell of a task, particularly on the scoring holes on the back nine, to not be scoring on those and to still be compiling a score. That's just not going to happen. And the other one, I think, is approach game. Historically, greens in regulation, we've got strokes gained approach as a more accurate proxy for that nowadays. And I think if you were to pick out one statistic, focus on one statistic to start your analysis from a strokes gained perspective, then strokes gained approach would be the one. Make sure you're getting yourself into a position where you can either easily make par or give yourself a birdie opportunity. And, you know, slowly but surely compile a score that's getting you close to that kind of 10 under number for the final nine on Sunday, and then see what happens.
Yeah. So we've got mid to strong power off the tee.
Mm.
We've got excellent approach play.
Yeah.
Barry, what else do you think is necessary to be a champion here over and above those two things? Just from your kind of watching or your statistical analysis that you've done on this?
I don't do statistical analysis. That's for you guys. Look, I have nothing to back this up, but it's more just a feel point that I'm going to try and make. But it's complementary to the strokes gained approach, or just the approach play. The ability to move the ball a little left to right and a little right to left can really help you access certain hole locations, whereas you're playing to a safe spot, but you're allowing the ball to be moving from that spot towards the hole without, you know, so it allows you to minimize the risk and maximize the result of a safe shot. So that I like to see that in a player being able to move it a little bit both ways. Doesn't necessarily have to happen off the tee, but with their approach shots to the greens, you could be playing to a very conservative target, but it can end up with a very, very beneficial result, or to give you even a 20-foot look for birdie versus a 30 or 35-foot look. That's one to me, which is not essential, but a very nice one to have if you have a player that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one that was kind of overriding. It might be my one and only point. I mean, look, the length off the tee is one we all know. Very bad. You know, be long enough. You don't need to be mega long, but be long enough. Look, short game. Yeah, the ability to scramble when you've missed the green. Yeah. Hopefully not in a disastrous spot, but to have something that combining, you know, spin control and trajectory around those greens, when more often than not you're playing those shots with the grass swept towards you. So, you know, places more of a premium on the accuracy of the strike of your chip shot or your flop shot, whatever you're going for. And then to combine that with just that kind of Harrington level of grit of just getting the ball in the hole for a par, just scrambling like it's just, you're not giving away that shot. You're getting that par. So I think that for me is, you know, one that you, it's great to watch. It's even better to see happen when it's one of your bets and you see him miss the green, your head goes in your hands. You're going, oh no, he's going to make double from here. Cause he's, and then somehow pulls off a good shot and then holds an 8.5, 9 footer for par, which he's 50-50 to make maybe, you know, and it's just, you're fist pumping those.
Yep.
I actually think that short game is overlooked here as a real thing that you need to win here. I'll go into that in a slightly more statistical data in a second. But I also think one of the keys here is a high ball flight. So that's another statistic I look out for. And also the ability and the, I wouldn't say ability, although that's part of it, but also the mental approach that you've got to be a kind of a player that's more than, especially on these par fives, you've got to be able to have that bravery to sometimes actually just say, I'm going to go for it and make go for that green in two. That kind of works in tandem with discipline, because there's going to be certain times you can't, but certain times you've got to. I mean, the 15th is, that's a really easy example, isn't it? The amount of times that you've got people that aren't in the ideal spot and they still go for it, and then they end up in the water at the front, the water at the back, when actually they should have just said, no, we're going to lay up here. And just go in with that short iron for the third. At least then you're making par at worst rather than making bogey. And this, again, this is the point, isn't it? This is Augusta. It's boring golf, some of it.
Yep.
We've only got three sets of strokes going data for this. Bearing in mind that only, how many players, 50-something, make the cut?
Yeah, 50 and ties. Yep.
So these strokes gain numbers are off of a 50 in the field kind of ranking. So Rahm, Scheffler, Matsuyama, just where they finish these various strokes gain skill sets against their peers that particular year, average it through. Strokes gained off the tee, 11th. Strokes gained on approach, 7th. Strokes gained around the green, 4th. That's crazy. Strokes gained tee to green, 2nd. So this feels very... We were talking about the Players' Championship a few years, and that was the same kind of metric there. Strokes gained off the tee, not as important, although it's hardly players. I think we were looking at an average of like 35th in the field.
Yeah.
You've still got to be long here, but approach and around the green game is so, so critical. Strokes gained putting, 18th. If you look at the traditional statistics, the old driving distance, fairways hit, the stuff that a lot of people ignore these days, but I still have a look at them. Driving distance, 21st. Accuracy, 26th. Wait for it, Paul. Greens in regulation, 6th. Now, I'm looking over 14 renewals here. The average greens in regulation of the winner, 6th in the field.
Yep.
Scrambling, 10th. Putting average, 12th. That's crazy. So short game and greens in regulation, long to mid irons and a bit of pop off the tee. If you've got all of those and your game's in good shape, you might have a crack at this, I think.
I know we've probably done this on many of our preview pods before. Do you have the average green and reg percentage of the winner? Or an average green and reg percentage of the field each year?
The percentage. 20. I haven't got the percentage on me. I'll have to do that for next year. I'll make a mental note. I'll have forgotten it in 5 minutes. But I'll just read through the last few years. 72.2 for Rahm. 68.1 for Scotty. Hence why you're starting to see why short game's so important. Because a lot of these PGA Tour events now, it's 88% GIR, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hideki, 69.4, greens and reg. Dustin Johnson in that crazily soft year, 83.3. Tiger, when he won, 80.6, and he topped greens in regulation for the week. Patrick Reed has won this as low as 66, so 2 in 3 greens.
Patrick Reed.
They all, bar Woods, who didn't need to because he was basically on the dance floor pretty much the whole time, had scrambling numbers of 16th for Reed, 5th for DJ, 8th for Hideki, 9th for Scheffler, 9th for Rahm.
Yep.
It's immaculate around the groups.
Bogey. Yeah. It's not an auto bogey, can it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
No, you probably need to be scrambling, 2/3 of the time, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Major championship golf, baby. Major championship golf. It's where we're at.
just have all parts of your game being pretty damn good for the week.
If you've got that, if you've got the ability to, yes.
Yeah.
Simple
as that. Not a big ask. Yeah, just sort everything out for 1 week and have everything go your way, and then you might have a chance of winning.
Just from a ratios perspective, bearing in mind we had a tournament last week where it was pretty much 52% of the strokes gained were on the greens and 48% were from the tee to the green, Stefan Jaeger won. Look at this golf course, 88% tee to green, 12% putting. I genuinely think a great statistic to look at here is lag putting from 25 feet and beyond. I don't think that's a bad stat to look at if you're a statistically minded individual. Someone that can just nurdle the ball up to 2.5 feet away from the hole from 45 feet across a green that's got huge ridges in it. Try and find a statistic for that one.
And running 14 on the stimp.
Yeah.
It's easy. Easy tournament to win, right?
Yeah.
Right, where do you want to head, chaps? We've spoken about the course, we've spoken about the agronomy. I could mention the amounts of rainfall. I mean, we're recording this.
Yes, please.
We're recording this a week before the actual tournament, and a lot of you are going to be listening to this during tournament week. So it'd be churlish of us to actually start talking about what the weather forecast is suggesting. What I can tell you is the amount of rain.
What's been like until now, Steve?
Well, okay, we might do that.
Yeah, but for the year so far, because are we going in with like a very high water table?
Well, this is it.
Yeah.
If it was in the UK, I would have thought the place would be flooded, and that's with the sub-air working. But
it would be underwater here in Ireland.
I will say so they have had plenty of rain, just like they did in Florida before all of their events. 4.75 inches in January, that's 121 mil. 3.9 inches in February, just under 100 millimeters. Last month, 5.5 inches of rain, 143 mil. And already, as of yesterday, Wednesday, they had another 0.75 inch. Sorry, that's wrong. 1/3 inch, 10 mil.
It looks okay between now and the tournament, though. I was having a peek beforehand. Looks
like dry. It's going to be dry. It's going to be dry right through to tournament Tuesday. And then you're looking at some kind of, the forecast is suggesting up to 50% chance of rain. Thursday, though, does look wet and windy this far off. I can see Shane Lowry limbering up right now.
There's some wind on Thursday and Friday. Like, it looks like it could be very interesting watching if it stays like it is.
I did mention, I used to categorise this golf course as a mid-score golf course, sort of 15 to 18 could win it. But as we said earlier, 10s and 12s are the winning totals this, and that brings certain players into the mix, and it ejects other kind of players. But just, I mean, it's way off. This isn't going to be calm by the looks of it. This isn't going to be a golf course where there's no wind and beautiful sunshine all the way. There looks like there's going to be weather involved at this on this long-range forecast. Whether that's for the full 4 days, who knows? But Thursday's been looking bad for a few days that I've been tracking it. So I think they're going to be. I think the players are going to be thrown different meteorological challenges. Put it that way.
That's what we like to see.
Absolutely, Paul. You've got a trends piece there, haven't you? Because we'll talk about players that we're interested in towards the latter end of this research podcast. Start throwing some trends at us, because you're the trends guy.
Yeah, in times gone by, pre-Live, you could get really quite defined with this. And going back to Barry's point about the fantastic piece of work that Dave Tindall does, that's, you know, Dave tries to pull out the salient points and find an answer to it. And I think the problem you've got nowadays is that a number of the statistics that we have looked at and do look at for this specifically exclude the Live players, because they simply won't appear on any of these numbers. And I think that's dangerous, because if you are, you know, we came into this 12 months ago, and, you know, we were wondering whether the would be a LIV player who competed and seriously contended, and you know, it was difficult to gauge. And of course, Brooks Koepka was there, and you know, had a real opportunity to win, didn't he? I think it's, you almost need to come back and approach this from a slightly different way now, and see where it takes you. But yes, there are some trends that you can work through. I think if you get as brutal as the two trends that you've touched on recently, Steve, so 10 of the last 12 players have won in the last six starts. There's another one which we've talked about various major championships, and that's performance in a previous major from the previous year. So 11 of the last 12 champions had a top 15 or better performance in one of the previous year's major championships.
That's right, yeah.
So those two stats, so 10 of the last 12 had won in the last six starts, 11 of the last 12 had a top 15 the previous year in one of the majors. If you get as brutal as that and say, okay, that's my shortlist, I'm just going to go with those two statistics, you're down to nine players.
I did actually bring a post-it note. The listeners will be chuckling. I've got my post-it note here. I've got my pen.
Is this the post-it note of success, is it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know me, I'm high tech, mate. Pen and post-it notes. Here we go. Away you go, Paul.
I'll take a screenshot of my analysis, Steve, and send it through to you.
Well, you could,
all right, no, the nine are...
That's scaring me there. Go on.
The nine in some kind of logical order are Scotty Scheffler, won't surprise you to hear, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, Wyndham Clark, Hideki Matsuyama, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Tommy Fleetwood, and Austin Eckroat.
Eckroat?
Eckroat's interesting, isn't he? He won PGA National, didn't he?
Did he get somewhere half decent at the US Open?
It's 10th at the US Open, and that was just his second major appearance. Missed the cut at the US Open a few years prior to that. So he's coming into this. Yeah, it's his first Masters start, and you know, there's all of the history, the Fuzzy Zeller quotes, etc. Around this, but he's coming in with the recent win, 10th off the back of his last major outing. I don't think he's going to win. I don't think he'll even place, but I think there's potentially a market for him out there, whether that's top 20, top debutant, something like that, that kind of thing. 250-1 outright right now on, with the bookies, and 500 on the exchange, and that probably gives you a good indication of what the chances are of him actually winning. But listen, I'm not saying Austin Eckroat goes and wins this tournament, because that's a bit fanciful, I think. But I think there's scope to find a market for him somewhere, because there's enough to like, I think. One that just misses out is Joaquin Niemann. Now, Joaquin's won three times since December, actually, and was 16th at last year's Masters.
Yeah.
That was,
so we're arguing over a place, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And that was his best major finish from what I counted up, 19 starts. But, you know, that suggests that he's getting his head around, getting to grips with major championship golf. And, you know, there was a time not so long ago where, you know, observers of golf, looking at the entirety of the golfing landscape, including LIV, were, you know, were saying, well, look, is Joaquin Niemann the most informed player in the world right now? You know, that was before Scotty found the putter, and I don't mean there's much of a question about it right now, but you don't have to go back long to ask the question and to, you know, to be making a case for Joaquin Niemann. Does he win again? It's, you know, no major top 10 in his CV so far, but could he place? Could he contend? Yeah, certainly a question. You'll notice there was no John Rahm on that list, and there's a few reasons why you might be a little bit down on John Rahm. Defending champions don't have a great record, and on your preview piece, Steve, you've articulated that, and I think you have to go back all the way to Tiger in 2002, I think it is, from memory.
Yeah.
Until you find a defending champion who's successfully defended here at Augusta. But Rahm, since he's gone to live, the form's just not quite been there, is it? No Xander on that list. No Hovland on that list. He's been off the boil since Eastlake. You know, going back to Eastlake, he was absolutely on top of his game, wasn't he? No Cantlay. And, you know, we could discuss Patrick Cantlay for 5 or 10 minutes on here and still not get to a point where I'd be comfortable backing him, I don't think. No
Please
wins.
Let's not. 10 seconds is enough.
Yeah, no wins now since the summer of 22. I've got a couple of other bits I can run through quickly. You talked about wind and the forecast. I've just did a little sneak peek as to how the predictor model would look next week. Notwithstanding what happens this week, of course, in Texas, in terms of wind. So I'll give you the top 10 as it stands right now of what the wind statistic on our predictor would look like for next week. Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy tied 9th, Max Homa 8th, John Rahm 7th, Denny McCarthy, good wind player, 6th, yeah. Harris English, Emiliano Griot tied 4th. Sungjae Im, another good win player, tied 2nd with Scotty Scheffler. And the top win player right now would be Tony Finau. Tony, T10 at the Masters, Finau, who can certainly get the... he can certainly score when there's a little bit of wind in the forecast. But yes, those are some of the angles that I've been looking at. I've got a couple more, which I'll run through quickly. If you average out, and there's lots of statistics that will pump into the predictor next week, but if you average performances, long courses, classical courses, bent grass greens and wind, then the top 10 that would come out of that right now, Max Homa, Hovland, Morikawa, Xander in 7th, Cantlay, Tony Finau in 5th again, JT, John Rahm, Scheffler, and number 1 would be Rory McIlroy.
Yeah. I suppose we need to put a big asterisk next to the predictor as well, because, again, it's not capturing this data for LIV anymore.
Well, no.
So you've got a whole host of players that you're not capturing data for anymore. I hate this. I hate these times. It just it's just sad, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting point.
We used to have
point.
All the players that could easily categorise because they all played against each other.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because one of my tasks for next week would be try to produce a predictor that actually balances this out a little bit. One of the things that I've done, and we talked off mic, Barry, about a certain player, which I'll talk about in this just now, but I've... Mm. looked across greens and regulation performance across all tours where it's captured for the last 6 months. So I've pumped in LIV performances, Asian Tour performances, DP World, PGA Tour, anywhere where one of the players that's in this week's or next week's field has played and averaged out all of their greens and regulation performances.
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
For the last 6 months. And that does bring some of these LIV players to the fore. Now, again, I'll read through the top 10.
Oh, are we giving this data away for free? Are we crazy?
Well, yeah, madness, I think.
Go on.
Top 10 of the blended greens and regulation for the last 6 months. I make it. Number 10, Dustin Johnson. DJ, I think DJ's got a good chance next week. Number 9, Ludwig Oberg. Number 8, John Rahm. Number 7, Patrick Reed. Now, when when I looked at this, I thought, well, the numbers must be wrong, and went back and had a look through. And if you go through Patrick Reed's last 6 months, there are some really, really strong greens and regulation performances. His last start in Macau, which was a couple of weeks back, he hit 87.5% of greens and regulation.
Wow.
Finished with 64-63 to finish 4th, I think, from memory. Patrick Reed finding greens in regulation, that is something that will find my notepad rather readily. 80-1 Patrick Reed. And we know how well he can play here. Number six, Bubba Watson. Number five, Bryson DeChambeau. Number four, Sergio Garcia. So you can see it's bringing the live guys into the conversation here. Number three, Scottie Scheffler won't surprise you. Number two, equally won't surprise you, Corey Connors. Number one might surprise you, Joaquin Niemann. Now, I wonder, looking at these stats, whether the courses that the live guys have been playing have generally been slightly easier in terms of greens and regulation for these guys to appear so readily on those statistics. But straight line average across everyone's performances over those 6 months would suggest that we cannot and should not ignore some of these guys that it could be featuring this week, particularly those that have got a decent record here at Augusta over the last few years. Interesting stuff.
That is awesome stuff, Paul. How, with all the money Liv have and they're throwing hundreds of millions around, do they not have a few volunteers or a few people to track strokes gained? It's just baffling how they don't do it.
Yeah, it's a real shame, isn't it? Because we could have a true view rather than just a guess as to how some of these players are actually performing.
Well, maybe they are. They have them tracked in some way, and they don't want to release the data because it might not be as flattering as we might think it to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
It might reveal something about the quality of golf being played, or the difficulty, or easiness of it.
Yeah, again, looking at these numbers, does it suggest that the setups are slightly more straightforward? Greens are more readily, easier to hit. There's certainly been, Bryson shot 58, didn't he? A few starts back, and there's 59s out there, lots of low scores. So potentially, there's something in the argument that there's still a difference between these, between the quality of the tournaments that are being played. But even so, you only have to go back to last year and talk about Brooks at the Masters. Brooks winning, his fifth major championship later in the year. There's plenty to chew on with this, I think.
I think what we're going to see this week across Live Miami is going to be very interesting, playing the Blue Monster, because that's a proper golf course, as we know. And when if you go through the winners list and the runners up list of the WGC events they used to hold there, it's just a who's who of Augusta. It's incredible.
Yep.
DJ, Mickelson, Woods, Reed. There's a whole list. Even Charles Schwartzel finished runner up there 1 year.
Yep.
It's madness. So I'm going to keep a very close eye on Liv Miami this week. In terms of since 1960, Jack Nicklaus, Faldo, Tiger Woods, the only players to have defended the green jacket. Tiger defended successfully in 2002. Interestingly enough, and this is the thing I find really interesting from a betting perspective, only Woods in 06 and Jordan Spieth in 2017 have finished in the top five when defending. So even if you're backing these players each way, you're getting your bum kicked on a regular basis when you're backing the green jacket. So Rahm's nowhere near my list at all. That's one thing that I'm definitely going to stick with this week. Should we get into some players, do you think?
Do it.
Now, we have coincided this podcast record with the fact that Boyle Sports are the first bookmaker for 2024 Masters to actually open up their default betting market. They've gone from anti-post to default, which is very courageous of them, on a Thursday, so a full week before the tournament actually tees off. So well done to Boyle Sports for that. We're going to use Boyle Sports prices for this podcast on that basis.
They're a little scared with their prices.
Yeah. But then you're comparing them against...
I'm going to say it.
You're not really comparing like for like, are you? True?
Sure, but yeah. I'm still going to say it. They're a little scared.
Yeah.
I have no affiliation. They don't pay me. I'm going to be honest.
I can see what you're saying. It's it'll be a conversation more to have with a real view on Tuesday, I suppose, on the basis of everyone will have their real markets out. But yes, I'll use their prices though during this, just as where we're at. Okay, I was going to say that they are 8 places each way at 50 odds. As of Masters Tournament Monday, they will have the pick your place markets available, where you'll be able to choose 10 or even 12 places for the 2024 Masters. How many competitors are we looking at this year, Paul?
89, I think, right now. So we could have another if we have a non-exempt the Valero, winner of the Valero. I think that
so
would
be can,
it.
So you can be covering 10 or 12 places off of a 90-man field maximum next week with Boyle Sports. They're playing a 50 odds on those extended places. Even better, for those of you who don't have access to a Boyle Sports account, register via Golf Betting System and place a first bet of £10. And you will receive a boosted £20 in free bets plus a £10 casino bonus welcome offer for those of you 18 plus in the UK. I am going to lovingly place a link to that offer with T's and C's in the podcast description. Right, here we go. Scheffler 4-1. McIlroy 10-1. Defending champion John Rahm at 12-1. So those are the top guys. Then we've got Brooks, Koepka and Xander at 18-1. I can't help but titter when I just read Xander's name. He causes such differences in opinions on X. It's funny, it really is. You get the truthers, you get those that just constantly hurt on the guy. He's your typical major championship 18-1 price is Xander. Then Matsuyama and Jordan Spieth at 20s. We've got Barry's love child, Joaquin Niemann at 22-1. Followed by Ludvig Åberg, Patrick Cantlay, who I wouldn't back with yours, Wyndham Clark, Bryson DeChambeau, Victor Hovland, Cam Smith, the list goes on, Justin Thomas, Will Zalatoris at 25-1. Dustin Johnson at 28-1. Now, I'm just going to bring this to the party. Trends and all that. Brackets. There are exceptions. But if you look at this factually, 4 of the last 5 winners of the Masters have been 9-1, 16-1, 9-1 and 16-1. The one that wasn't was Matsuyama, who hadn't even got a top 10 in the season prior to winning this. Shoots down so many of these statistical trends. He was 45-1. So this is how I'm trying to frame this in my mind before I write my final preview on Monday morning. So 4 of the last 5 have been 16-1 or below. From that point on, it's 28-1, 28-1, 45-45, 55-55, 66 is a 90-1 Charles Schwartzel. So straight away, I'm saying to myself, there's a bit of a death trap here. Anything beneath or between 16s and 28 haven't won the Masters since 2011. Now, that rules out, I mean, we're only using Boyle Sports odds, but that rules out a whole list of 25-1 shots that I've just almost lost breath with reading out. If you're going to be kind of blunt and blasé about it, well, I'll tell you another one I was going to shout out there as well. Only the last debutant to win here, the old Fuzzy Zeller number, it was Fuzzy. The last player to win their first ever top level tour title, being the Masters, Butch Harmon. in 1950.
Wow.
So if Cameron Young was to win this, and it was his first ever main tour title, he's broken a trend that's 64 years and counting. He was in the top 10 here last year, was Cam Young.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a major game about him.
Oh, yeah. And as regulars know, another player I finished second place on a couple of weeks ago.
Does he have that? He kind of gives off a bit of Xander vibes in terms of his ability to grab and win a tournament. Has all the things you kind of want in a player to be betting on, but for want of a better word, that X factor.
All of those odds I mentioned were for the winner, okay? And at the end of the day, we're looking for the winner here, aren't we? We're looking for the winner. If you're looking from an each-way perspective, though, Phil Mickelson last year was 200-1, full each-way return. Russell Henley, 150-1. Patrick Reed, 66-1. Year prior to that, we had Corey Connors at 50-1, Sungjae Im at 50-1, all full each-way returns, Shane Lowry at 45-1. And the year before that, Will Zalatoris on his course debut, 80-1, finished runner-up. Also in the places, Connors at 80-1, Rose at 90-1, Leishman 125-1. I'm not going to mention Dylan Fratelli Paul at 250-1 in November 2020, and CT Pan 500-1. There are big price places likely to be there.
So you're telling me there is a chance for Austin Aykroyd then?
Definitely.
Hmm.
I won't be backing him, but there's a chance.
That's probably to your benefit, Paul, that Steve is staying away.
I've just put an extra tick by his name now.
Well, I'm going to open the floor to you guys. I don't know. I mean, I've been backing Scotty Scheffler recently, 4-1. I did say last week the only reason I actually put him up at Houston was he was 3-1 to win that, and he was 4-1 best price 7-2 to win the Masters, which I thought was ludicrous.
Yeah, yeah, and he came mighty close to winning, didn't he?
One 5.5 foot putt from forcing a playoff, so it was close.
It's a good bet, just didn't work.
4-1.
Does he win this? Does he win this one in four?
I just wonder what number he'd have to get to make it. I might just be patient on it. I can't see Scotty Scheffler not being in the mix.
No.
Go on, Barry.
Just to answer your question, Steve, before Paul moves on, I think he wins 1-4,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to bet him. I'm not a logical bettor or one that kind of track stuff properly. I just gotta do it for fun. Probably lose money at it, but it's just entertainment. I think he wins 1-4, but that just doesn't float my boat.
No, for me, if the number were to get north of 5, I might be quite tempted. I wonder when everything settles down and we're looking at the market on Wednesday afternoon. Particularly on the exchange, if a lot of the mainstream tipsters have deliberately avoided Scotty Scheffler, whether we'll see numbers that are starting to get more attractive. But yeah,
if you're betting him, right, you're going to be betting for win only.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Surely, okay. So what? Like, wait for. Here's one like way I would think about it. Wait for the tee times. Hope he's off in the afternoon wave, and see do a few players get off to a few decent players, like big names, get off to a good enough start to separate themselves from him by a few shots, and hope his price drifts out a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like if he's starting 4 or 5 behind, the lead is 5 under.
Yeah. Yeah. Lo and behold, might even make a bogey on the first few holes, and all of a sudden,
there you go.
I see what you're saying.
Mike gets. But that's a risk because it might not work out.
No, it might not. And
when he goes birdie, one and two.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We do see...
And, oh, just like the Spieth years where he just ended the tournament within two or three holes of starting. You're like, yeah. Oh, God, it's over.
Job done. We do often see some of the really big names in some of the very late marquee groups on Thursday. But equally, yeah, we often see a lot of the first round leaders come from back end of the day as well. So, yeah, the draw will be interesting. It may shape where or how I choose to play Scotty because I haven't quite decided yet. But
it could be a draw bias based on the wind as well.
Absolutely, it could be. And, you know, to go back to the point about the wind, there's potential for that to be impacting Thursday and Friday. And if it looks like there's a bias one way or the other, then that, you know, could well influence how that all shapes up. What about you, Steve? You tempted on Scotty?
I've been mulling over the process of putting him up at win only 6 points or whatever the thing is, and then just covering off players that are deeper in those odds in that juicy 28-1 and above level. But I don't know. I'm kind of moving away from that in my thought process over the last few hours.
Will you back any of Scheffler, McIlroy or Rahm?
The only one I would back would be Scheffler. And this is the kind of stuff the listeners want to listen to, I suppose. For me, I've got no interest in McIlroy. I've got no interest in Rahm. That's a flat red line through. Not one iota of interest.
So if you go back to your point about the four of the last five winners at 16-1 or shorter, then if your assertion's right there, then Scotty wins.
Potentially, although you've got to ask yourself, these are the odds on Thursday. What happens if... I was having this chat with Andy Lack on his podcast yesterday. There's going to be a couple of players that might get sucked into this 16-1 level. One is Brooks Koepka, who's won five majors. One is Xander, just sheer weight of money. And one would be Jordan Spieth if he goes absolutely ape at the Valero Texas Open.
Yep, can see that.
The one player I have got significant interest in, as ever at a major, will be Brooks. Because I know how Brooks works. And I think what happened to him last year is something that's going to deeply motivate him to put right. And when you've won six majors, just have a look on Wikipedia and start seeing what kind of names you're surrounded by.
Yep.
Phenomenal. Don't forget as well, he wins this, he's one away from the Grand Slam, which would be the Open. So I think Brooks, you've got to have a serious look about Brooks.
Yep. And there's good money coming in for him today, just while we're here on the podcast. He's been backed in a number of places.
Yeah.
He's only won five majors. You'd be thinking I was living in an alternate timeline there where Brooks had won six, Steve.
I think he was talking about winning his sixth.
Winning his sixth.
Okay. Winning his sixth. Okay. Bad headphones.
I mean, to me, it's not a question. If I'm looking at the three guys at 20-1, who would you back? How would you number them, Steve? Koepka number one, Xander number two, and Jordan Spieth would be number three. For me, I just haven't seen anything out of Jordan that gives me any confidence that he would actually win a major, even though it's his favourite golf course in the whole world.
Anybody, any idea how, just moving, seeing, just looking slightly below that, the next kind of tranche, Clark, Auber, Thomas. How is Justin Thomas 25-1? Best price 28.
No idea.
His price never moves.
Did we get any information on why he split up with Bones?
No. I didn't yet anyway.
I suppose that's something that wouldn't be put public, wouldn't it?
Oh, it'll leak out at some stage.
There's always just this fear from the bookies, isn't there, that he'll find that magical week which we know he's capable of doing. There's just no indication that it's any time soon. But 28-1, and yeah, he probably won't. But he won't shift massively from that point during the course of next week. He'll have his backers at that rate.
In that 25s, ball sports, 28s that are out there range, the ones that interest me the most are Wyndham Clark. But I've already got a big bet. Well, I'd say a big bet. I've got a big priced bet on him on the exchange. I mean, Oberg just plays well everywhere. I've got no interest in JT. I've got no interest in Hovland. I think Neiman's worth a very close look. I think Matsuama's worth a very, very close look. And I'm undecided on Cam Smith and Will Zalatoris. And you can't back them all.
No.
Can't back them all. What about a deeper price? You know, this 40s and above that we were going through historically that have generated some juicy winners. Mm. So Matsuama 45s, Garcia 45s, Reed 55s, Watson 55s, Willett 66s. Is there anyone in that kind of range that's piqued your interest?
What? Probably, yeah, definitely one.
Go on, Barry. Give us the
winner. I've already backed him on the exchange because he's up near 70.
Wow.
And I will back. It's lovely. And I will back him each way because there's a lot of good golf coming out of him. Needs to get that win. The big win, like since his major, like he won the BMW PGA, but wants that one over in the States. It's Shane Lowry. Something's got to give. He either goes completely off the boil or he wins. It feels like the pressure is there, you know, and it's going to snap in one way or another. So yeah, he'll find that kind of mix of price and places next week for the each way bet on him.
I don't think Shane's a difficult puzzle to actually get right, and I hear so many people saying they can't read Shane Lowry right. I don't really understand it. If he's playing in the States and he's playing at a typical PGA Tour, we've watered the greens beyond life tournament, he's got no chance. As soon as you take him to a tough golf course, a PGA National, a Bay Hill, where the wind's blowing and there was a bit of release in greens and tough rough, guess what? Ooh, Shane's near the top of the leaderboard. So if we're seeing a weather pattern that comes into Augusta next week that looks like it's going to cause problems, Shane becomes a real angle.
His last four results, 4th, 3rd, 19th, 29th. His last four Masters, 25th, 21st, 3rd, 16th.
Absolutely.
The ingredients are there.
Absolutely.
Can I back you up statistically, Barry?
Please do.
One of the other angles I've just started to work through is going back to Steve's trends article. Three key statistics he picks out on that are height to apex, strokes gained approach, and par four birdie or better. Now, if you rank all the field, and notwithstanding what we talked about, the live players don't appear in this. If you rank all of the field that do appear in those three stats for the season to date and average the positions of all three of those stats, then the top five, Reed, fifth, Shane Lowry, fourth, Xander, third, Cam Young, second, Wyndham Clark, who Steve just mentioned, and first is Tony Finau once again.
Tony the Terminator Finau.
Tony Finau.
The artist formerly known as T4.
T10 at the Masters.
Well, no, you've mucked it up. He was Terminator. He was then Tony T2 Finau, and then previous to that, he was T4 Finau. Yeah. Mm. In fact, you could probably still call him T4 Finau when it comes to majors.
Mm.
But we've always said on this podcast, he's always got a very underrated major championship curriculum vitae.
Mm.
He doesn't mind mucking. He doesn't mind mixing it, does he? In majors,
no. So 40-1 out there right now. I wonder if we'll get 45-1 with some extended places next week, because he seems to be drifting a little bit. Don't forget he was second.
He's not being back right now.
No, he's not. Don't forget he was second last time out, and he has got a fantastic, consistent record at the Masters of finishing in those kind of top eight, top ten positions.
Never missed a cut.
Yeah. Potentially the Masters. Who could find the each way places. From an each way perspective, you get an extended places. Shane, fifth on that list I just read through. Finau. Both of them got to be considerations, I think. Food for thought.
Anybody in that region interests you, Steve?
In what region?
In that region of prices.
40-50 kind of bracket, I suppose.
Well, definitely Shane. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of love going around for Sir Heath. I'm more tempted, you know, in that 80-1 area, and I can see Patty Reed just beaming at me. If he does anything of any sort at Doral, which is a golf course he loves,
he'll be 50s.
He'll be 50s, be really, but he'll be, I don't know about 50s, but he certainly won't be getting 80s, but he's going to be tempting, isn't he? I mean, put it this way. Would you take Patrick Reed at 80-1 or little Diddy Brian Harman at 45-1 with Paddy Power? I mean, it's just ridiculous. I love Brian Harman, but he's not contending around Augusta. Not happening.
Yep. No, I get that.
With Reed, he's so damned hard-nosed, you might find he could get right into the heat of the battle and hang around as well.
Yeah, particularly if it's a challenging renewal, which, again, we're a week out, but suggests there's going to be some challenge out there.
Yeah. Patrick Reed at 80-1 or Tyrrell Hatton at 80-1, that every time he goes there, moans that he doesn't like Augusta and the setup isn't very good. At Augusta, of all places. I mean, what the hell? It's not even a conversation, is it? So, yeah, there's players there that I like. It's like going to a nice sweet store, isn't it? And there's so much you like the look of, but you can't get to all of it. That's kind of where I'm at. Anyone at big prices? I said to Andy on his podcast yesterday, you look statistically right now, there aren't many players playing better tee to green golf than Siwoo Kim.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing triple digit 100-1s out there, although he's been back today.
Yeah, there's a bit of a mix of prices there, which is never a bad thing from a punting perspective. Shows some disparity between the bookmakers' thoughts on him. But yeah, Siwoo, potentially the kind of players who could go well. I don't know. We've talked about Jake Knapp and how he might perform on his Masters debut, but he was pretty poor last time out, wasn't he? When he carrying our money, Barry.
Yeah, so he forgot to hit the button on the kettle to boil it. I mean, he could. He might not, but might be a fun bet if you can get him at 150 or 175-1 with extended places.
Stack of places, yeah.
Probably get my interest for a couple of euro each way.
Lucas Glover 300-1. Well, after he wins this week, Steve, then he's not going to be that wise.
I just knew you.
Yeah.
I've kept hearing over the last 6 weeks that Keith Mitchell's probably the best golfer on earth, and if he doesn't win the Valero this week, he's not even going to be playing at the Masters. So,
no.
You know, people have opinions on golfers, don't they?
There's going to be an asterisk.
Lucas Glover doesn't owe us anything after last summer.
No.
We love him.
No. Yeah. Good luck, Lucas.
Have you heard anything before we close this down on Tiger Woods? Any likelihood of Tiger playing next week?
Just the usual Nota Begay stuff. Those little comments out in it, but he just said it's whether he can string the four rounds of walking together. He said he can play the game. Ankle is kind of, left ankle's frozen, lower back's kind of very tight and not very movable, but it's all about the four rounds of walking and recovering between rounds. Which is hardly anything shocking or astonishing or revelatory to us. We can all see anytime Tiger's been out there, that's visually the case. So this is the first time it's felt going into a big tournament that when he was going into Riviera, there was a huge Tiger's gonna play Riviera. Going into the Masters, maybe it just hasn't built up to the hype yet, or the hype hasn't built up yet because it's the Thursday before. But it feels there's so many other storylines that are, we don't need the Tiger storyline to make it a big thing. It is.
I get that.
And if he doesn't play, I don't feel like anything's going to be overly lost from the tournament. Is that bad to say?
No, I think it's fair. Yeah.
There are so many
different subplots.
Yeah,
I hope he does. I hope he can play four rounds and is reasonably comfortable and not struggling and grimacing and it'd be cool to watch him, paint his way around there.
Yep.
Agreed. Anything else to add, or should we close it down?
No, all good, I think. A few more days of analysis and then see where it takes us for next week.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
And yourself.
You too, guys.
Back to our Valero Texas Open leaderboard watching. I hope, I'm not even going to say that. I'm not going to close off with that because it's got, we haven't got to that stage yet. I will point you in the direction of the description where I will put a link through to my research piece. There's a lot more information in there. Golf Betting System linked to the homepage as well. The Strokes Gained Rankings piece of work that Paul done is absolutely fantastic. It has to be said. I was playing with it earlier. Columns there of different skill sets are all rankable. It's just really, really good, really worth looking at. So that's something I would point in your direction. So come and use Golf Betting System completely free of charge. We will be back with our tips pod next Tuesday. The date is the 9th of April. Until then, we'll see you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the Golf Betting System. The Golf Betting System is the Golf Betting System.